It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network. Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates and I am your host. I am joined as always by my co-host Mike Taglier. No insults from me today, buddy. You can find both of us on Twitter at KyleYNFL and at Mike Taglier NFL. Hey Tags, you remember that time when the Jets traded for Kalen Ballage?
I do, and it was just yesterday if you guys missed it. It's a joke that keeps on giving. I mean, I don't know where we can go with Adam Gase at this point. I don't think anything would be a surprise. Like if they signed Devonta Freeman today, I wouldn't be shocked at all, just because it seems like he's collecting these running backs that, but Devonta Freeman never played in Miami. I guess he's trying to recreate his Miami days that got him fired. I don't know. It just makes me feel like the guy that, you know, he almost wants to get fired from his job. I don't get it.
Adam Gase saw Kalen Ballage's 1.8 yards per carry last season and was like, hey, I got to have that. But hey, we've got an awesome guest for you guys today. That's Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus. He can be found on Twitter at iHarditz. He's also the self-appointed president of the Cordarrelle Patterson fan club. Ian, thanks for taking some time out of your day to chat with us.
Maybe the Bears RB1, guys. We'll see. But yeah, it's good to be back on here. Always enjoy talking with the Fantasy Pros gang.
For sure. Let's dive right in, guys. Before we get into the content for today's show, I want to take a second to make sure everyone knows about our draft assistant. With drafts happening now, it's incredibly important that you know about this amazing tool. Our draft assistant can sync with your draft and offer pick suggestions and the percent odds of any player getting taken before your next pick, along with a ton of other valuable expert advice. Our co-pilot feature allows you to draft straight from the draft assistant for NFL.com and ESPN drafts. Plus, it's got a sleek layout and it's very easy to use, especially since it uses the same interface as our draft simulator. We support all kinds of leagues from all kinds of commissioner sites like ESPN, NFL.com, Yahoo, CBS Sports, and Sleeper, along with many others. Crush your draft with our draft assistant at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Now, keep in mind that only MVP and Hall of Fame subscribers can use the draft assistant with Sync. If you're not already an MVP or Hall of Fame subscriber, then listen up. We've got a special offer going on right now for 6 free months of our Hall of Fame package, which is a $65 value and our highest subscription tier. That grants you unlimited access to all our tools and premium features for the next 6 months. To claim this offer, all you have to do is head to fantasypros.com/offers, make a $10 deposit if you're a new user for any of these daily fantasy sites, Monkey Knife Fight, FanDuel, or DraftKings, and enter a contest. That's it. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers. All right, guys, there are a couple news items that I do want to touch on just super briefly before we talk about league winners. Joe Mixon missed practice again today with a minor injury. They said it's migraines again, but Tags, are you starting to get concerned?
I am a little bit. And I said this yesterday that I didn't want to speculate on it, but Zach Taylor came out in the press today and said he does not believe that Joe Mixon's absences were because of the contract situation. When you say I don't believe, that doesn't mean you don't know for certain. He doesn't know for certain that it's not due to that. He said that Mixon has been transparent throughout this process and what he wants done. But again, there is language in the CBA that there's some loopholes, because if a player sits out for the entire season, he doesn't accumulate that year towards free agency. But there is some language in there that I've been told that if a player has a minor injury and he can't play, that he still would accrue that year. So this is a weird situation, and it's starting to irk me a little bit. And to the point where I'm moving him further and further down in drafts, especially if you're drafting this weekend, if we don't have any clarity. The idea is that in the first and second rounds, you do not need to win your draft in the first, second round. You don't. You need to make sure that you have stable presences in your lineup. And imagine, for whatever reason, if you had a Melvin Gordon situation on your hands and Joe Mixon doesn't play for the first 4 to 6 weeks because he's holding out due to a minor injury or whatever the case may be. So yes, I am moving him down my board a little bit.
Ian, are you concerned as well? Is this something where if you're drafting this weekend, right, and this is all the news that we have to go off of, are you looking at Joe Mixon in the first round still, or how far does he have to fall for you to consider him?
I'm kind of with Tags here. I mean, just go by ADP, take the sure things in the first round or two. It's kind of the same thing with like Dalvin Cook, where I'm not going to drop these guys outside my top 12 or anything like that. But, you know, the conversation are like Chubb versus Mixon, Mixon versus Eckler. I'm going to take those other guys right now because this is weird. This is funky. And, you know, with Dalvin Cook and Shefty kind of wondering if he doesn't get a new contract, what's going to happen there? I'm putting Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Cook. So, yeah, you know, just take the safer option. I would, you know, just on a separate note, don't be so, I guess, jumpy to go get Giovanni Bernard and assume he's going to step into that Mixon role. I think we're going to see another two-back committee with Travion Williams if Mixon does miss time. And Travion could actually be the guy that gets the bulk of those carries. So I realize, you know, in past years when Jeremy Hill or Mixon missed time, Gio did get some featured roles, but that was under a different coaching staff. And, you know, he had quite a few less miles on the tires. So I think, you know, Mixon, and I'm not going to be lining up to draft him. And also don't be so sure that this is going to be a one-back backfield if he does, in fact, miss time.
It's good insight. Additionally, guys, Ronald Jones left Bucks practice earlier today with an apparent left foot injury. We don't know anything more at this point, but we're hoping that it's nothing serious. I just wanted to make sure that we mentioned it on the show today. Again, that's another thing that if you're drafting this weekend and you start to see Ronald Jones's ADP come up, that might just be something to consider and pay attention to on Twitter. You know, we'll be on Twitter at Kyle Y NFL, at Mike Taglier NFL. I'm sure we're going to be talking about if any news does come out about Ronald Jones. All right, guys, let's get into the content for today's show. We are looking at league winners, these guys who could emerge from the mid to late rounds and help lead people to fantasy football titles, right? This may mean that some things need to fall their way, but they absolutely have a chance of leading your roster to a fantasy football championship. We're going to talk about two running backs each, two wide receivers, one quarterback, and one tight end. I'm sure there will be some overlap in these guys, right? But we should get through plenty of players here. Ian, we'll let you kick us off as you're our guest, and then we can go to Tags, and then we'll just keep going around the room.
Yeah, so starting off with QB, my late round, you know, mid-late round QB that I think could be a league winner is Mr. Joe Burrow, 1.01. And look, since 2010, we've seen six rookie QBs post QB1 numbers. Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, RG3, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, and most recently, Kyler Murray. And the main things from that group were they're all week one starter, and they all averaged at least 25 rushing yards in college. Burrow meets both those criteria. I mean, he was at 27 rushing yards per game at LSU. No one's going to confuse him with Cam or Kyler as a rusher, but, you know, especially when you consider like how collegiate rushing totals, you know, you're losing yardage when he gets sacked. It's impressive, and he gives you a decent floor there. And then once you just start to look at the offense, I mean, AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, my guy Auden Tate, T. Higgins, you know, Mixon if he's there, Gio Bernard. There's a lot of skill position talent for a team that just finished with the worst record in the league. And yeah, the offensive line, even getting Jonah Williams back, it's an issue, but honestly, like, this defense is probably still going to suck. This was one of just 9 teams to throw the ball at least 600 times last season. Seems to me like a similar situation to Kyler. Like, we won't have that same level of rushing floor, but it's going to be an offense that's going to have to ask Burrow to do as much as he can from day one. It's a bad enough defense that they're going to consistently be in comeback mode, and Burrow's still going at the bottom of these drafts. I mean, I feel like I'm being a little bit, like, pessimistic with his talent, because the other side of things is Burrow, who just had the best season we've pretty much ever seen from a collegiate quarterback, starts playing like that from day one. So in terms of the late round quarterbacks available, man, give me Burrow over any of these, you know, kind of aging veteran types with no rushing floor 8 days of the week.
Tags, I mean, Joe Burrow, we've talked about him, that the talent is there. And everything that Ian said is completely correct, that he could be this guy that emerges. But do you have concerns about drafting him, right? He's QB 16, I think, off the board right now. Last time I checked in ADP, the Chargers defense, week one, Cleveland's defense, which is not a shabby defense, right? I think that's fine. It doesn't scare me off as much as the Chargers. And then the Eagles defense in week three. Then, he gets Jacksonville in week four. Startup Joe Burrow, holy crap. But, like, does this concern you about drafting him, or do you think he's going to be one of these guys, especially with no offseason, that it takes a while for him to get to the point where he can win you a league?
Yeah, Burrow was one of the guys that I actually contemplated for this section, because I don't think people realize just the type of rushing upside that he does present. And if you go back and watch his college film, it was one of my biggest knocks on Burrow, is that he needs to protect himself. A very Tony Romo type player, where he's a guy that can, I think people forget at the beginning of Tony Romo's career, he had some mobility to his game, but he took a lot of hits over those times. And Joe Burrow was a guy that took a lot of hits in college because he refuses to just slide. I want him to slide more often. I think he needs to learn that. Zach Taylor needs to protect him, but having those skill position players like Ian talked about at his disposal, it's one of the reasons I like the Bengals players. But once you get down to it, you say, it's like Rumford Johnny on Twitter, friend of the show, he basically came up with this analogy that I always liked, and he says, every individual skill position player is a pancake, and who's pouring the syrup all over those pancakes? It's Joe Burrow. So if you're in a league, and by the way, analysts in the industry are drafting multiple quarterbacks this year. Don't let them lie to you. Don't tell you they're not. They're doing it because they're worried about the state of the NFL. And if a player gets scratched on Sunday morning, they don't want to have to worry about going to the waiver wire and not finding a quarterback. So most people are drafting two quarterbacks this year. If you get someone like a Matt Ryan, okay, and then you pair him with someone like a Joe Burrow, that's fantastic, because the idea is like almost the same thing as last year. You could have drafted someone like Matt Ryan and grabbed Lamar Jackson in the later rounds and then just say, all right, we know the upside's there, so why not grab him, keep him on your bench? And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Who gives a crap? You spent a double-digit round pick on him. Joe Burrow's being able to be had in, 13th, 14th round. So I definitely dig this call.
All right, Tags, I'm going to turn it right back to you. At the quarterback position, who is someone that you're looking at as a league winner in 2020?
I did think about Burrow, and then I went to another quarterback that just came out with one of the greatest montages of all time, and that's Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew is a guy, he rushed for 342 yards last year. I don't think people realize just how high his rushing floor was every single week. And he didn't score any rushing touchdowns because Leonard Fournette got every single carry inside the 5 yard line for this team. That's the only player in the NFL. Leonard Fournette was the only player who had 100% of his team's carries inside the 5 yard line. That's going to change under Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden, if you go back to him with RG3, obviously he was able to make it work with him as a mobile quarterback. And then you move on to Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, people don't realize this, he had like 6 rushing touchdowns, I think, in back-to-back seasons under Gruden. He's willing to give him those goal line carries just to let him get the ball in. Minshew can do that. And just as Ian was talking about with Joe Burrow, the Jags defense is horrible, guys. It's really bad. They've lost so many starters on that team. I know they drafted a lot of defensive talent, and they're basically tanking this year. It's very much like the Bucs last year, where it's like, I know that Minshew doesn't have the weapons that Jameis Winston did, but he has that rushing ability. He has 5 rushing touchdown upside, and DJ Chark growing into his role. Dede Westbrook's a better football player than I think people give him credit for. Laviska Shenault is coming up into his own. You have Chris Thompson as a receiving option, and if Leonard Fournette can at least improve some efficiency in the passing game, I believe Gardner Minshew is a fantastic QB2 to have on your fantasy team. One that probably presents a higher floor right out of the gate than Joe Burrow, but may not present the massive upside that Burrow does. But I do think that he's an excellent QB2 to have on your team.
Yeah, I think a Minshew, we could be looking at the 2020 version of what Ryan Fitzpatrick was last year. I mean, the DGAF, yes, YOLO ball gunslinger that's on a bad team and isn't going to flirt with playoff contention or anything, but guys got the talent around him. Chark could definitely be this year's version of that Devontae Parker kind of alpha wide receiver one, and he's going to have every chance to do his thing. So it wasn't like he was exactly fearful of anything last season as it was. And yeah, I mean, in the rushing upside, it was was wild to me was that literally all of his production came on scrambles last season. So even just a little bit of creativity from Jay Gruden, you know, in the red zone, like you were talking about, tags could go a long way with him. So yeah, I mean, he was the QB 12 in weeks 1 through 9 last season before Nick Foles got back to action. There's a non-zero chance Minshew is just awesome. And man, there's like no more entertaining QB to see on social media these days. So I'm rooting for him big time.
And real quick, Yates, the stat I have here for this, Cousins for under Jay Gruden from 2015 to 2017, that's 3 years. He rushed for 323 yards and 13 touchdowns in those games.
That's crazy.
Again, going back to Minshew, he rushed for 342 yards, more yards than Cousins had over those entire 3 years, didn't score a single rushing touchdown. So I just don't think people are realizing Minshew's floor is there, and there's a ceiling considering the state of that defense.
Yeah, if we've got the parallel of Gardner Minshew to Ryan Fitzpatrick, my fear is that Gardner Minshew better not be leading the Jaguars in rushing, right? What Ryan Fitzpatrick did. Then we've got more of an issue on our hands with Leonard Fournette there. Guys, I'm gonna mention a quarterback here that there are some health concerns, right? The last time that we saw Cam Newton on the field, it was not pretty. But if we're talking about a league winner, this guy that if everything goes their way can absolutely lead you to a fantasy football title, it's Cam Newton. And you're talking about him in this Patriots offense where they've signed him to a one-year deal, a one-year prove-it deal, and this team is not going to be as good as it was last year. They saw several key pieces opt out on that defense. Now, it's Bill Belichick, so I could absolutely eat my words there, but with their coaching philosophy here, I think they're just going to look at Cam Newton and say, we're going to do whatever it takes to win games this year, and if that means riding you into the ground, then so be it, because we have you on a one-year deal. You might not be our long-term answer at the position. Cam Newton's only 31 years old, guys. Now, and granted, like, his body has been through a lot, but we're also talking about a guy who is practically Superman, right? Like, he has been training like none other this offseason. So I love his matchup right out of the gate against Miami in week 1. The rushing ability and rushing upside at the quarterback position for fantasy football is so crucial. And Cam Newton presents that like none other. So I think for him, if he can stay healthy all season, I think he's going to drastically outperform where he's being drafted. He's someone that I love targeting at the quarterback position. Tags, I know that you are a little bit more hesitant on Cam Newton, so I'll just throw this to you. But can you see the path for him to be a league winner in 2020?
I mean, yeah, sure. I just think it's betting against like what's happened in history. And I was watching an interview with Cam Newton the other day, and he seems like he's got his head together. He looks like he lost weight too. I don't know if that was by design. I don't know if it's because he obviously is getting older and he wants to make sure that he's not as achy when he's moving around, because the more weight you carry as you get older, the more difficult it is. And he was always a physical specimen that you wondered how he was able to move the way he did at whatever 260 pounds or whatever he was. But Cam, I mean, I think we all want to see him re-enter that conversation. I just don't know if it happens at 31 years old. Ian, what's your take on Cam Newton? Like, he's one of the most difficult players for me to rank this year, just because, you know, the player that he was in fantasy football, the player that we last seen him as, and then knowing as a mobile quarterback getting further along in his career, if he doesn't have his legs as much as he used to, is his ceiling really there?
I'm with Kyle. I mean, you know, before coming on the show, I highlighted 3 quarterbacks in my rankings to potentially talk about, and they were Burrow, Cam Newton, and Gardner Minshew. So I'm pretty much
there
on the same page as you guys here. But no, I've had Cam ranked. He's been QB 13 for me since he signed with the Patriots. I mean, people that, you know, were out there thinking that it was really going to be a competition that Cam, a healthy Cam, wasn't capable of winning. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but I just look, whenever he has been out there, even moderately healthy, he has been a borderline fantasy QB 1 at worst. I understand the weapons aren't great in New England, and yeah, it's not going to be the best version of the Patriots we've ever seen, but you know, until 2018, 2019, which is unfortunate because that's right when the health concerns started for Cam, but those Panthers teams, and God forbid we want to go all the way back to the Auburn team he dragged to a national title, like, he's never had great weapons. You can make an argument that Harry, Sanu, and Edelman are like a top 2 or 3 wide receiver group of Cam's career, even if they're like, you know, bottom 5 unit in the NFL right now. So yeah, maybe we won't get the same sort of rushing upside, but I think Cam still has like a decent way to fall, and, you know, in order for him to kind of meet his ADP. If we get 16 games out of Cam, like, he's going to smash that ADP, no questions asked.
The new wave of fantasy sports is finally here. Do you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports? Live for the short-term gratification of DFS? Then be the first to try weekly fantasy sports. Owner's Box is here to change the game. Weekly fantasy sports keep players engaged through live drafting, social interaction, and a new layer of strategy that puts the power back in your hands. No more submitting a lineup and forgetting about it. Users will be engaged throughout the entirety of the contest. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. Unlike the salary cap in Daily, Owner's Box has created a first-to-market rule set that revolves around a set number of game opportunities by roster position. Your players earn you points throughout the week, but only if you have enough games available at that position. In addition, the Owner's Box platform will curate a community amongst its users and allow them to engage socially in multiple different ways. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Invite your friends to join the platform and watch the free rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Go to ownersbox.com/fantasypros and sign up for their exclusive beta right now. Each user who signs up will receive 100 Owner's Bucks that can be used to enter contests risk-free and will convert to cash when real money contests begin. Again, that's www.ownersbox.com/fantasypros. All right, guys, let's move on to the running back position here. We'll go twice around the room. So, Ian, you get first crack here. Who are you looking at the running back position as a potential league winner?
So the more I look at it, I think Damian Harris is just, especially with this new news coming out from Patriots camp, he's worth a flyer, especially as long as that ADP doesn't creep up too high. And you look at what the Patriots have done in recent seasons with Sony, and Sony has been that early down guy getting 15 to 20 plus rushes per game while James White and Burkhead soak up the pass down work. And I mean, could not have had a better opportunity to smash last year. And for him to do nothing with that, he's got the chronic knee issues. And then he just got back off the pup list with this foot thing. And Damon Harris has just, been unequivocally seemingly the star of Patriots camp. So when you can get a guy this late in drafts that, again, maybe he's moving up, maybe someone snipes him a little bit earlier in your drafts, but anytime you get the double digit rounds, you can still snag a running back that could feasibly be getting 15 plus touches per game from week one on, I think you have to do it. And okay, maybe Cam takes some of the goal line touches, maybe Harris, who did absolutely nothing last year, just isn't that good of a player. But I mean, for the same reason, like someone like Jordan Howard is a value, just because you can't get that many guaranteed touches that late in the draft. I think Harris is just worthy of the dart throw for the potential volume alone.
Yeah, if you've been listening to this podcast for a couple of months now, you can go back like over a month ago when I was saying that Damian Harris was someone to snag with one of your final round picks in like a best ball format. Obviously, we're now in draft season. His name is starting to creep up there because Sony Michel is someone that they rumored to be potentially on the pup list. He's obviously been inefficient with the touches that he's been getting. James White doesn't necessarily fit the skill set of someone like Cam Newton and what he's done over the course of his career. Damian Harris wasn't on the field a lot last year, and I think a lot of people are going to point to that and say, well, Michel was there last year and he was very inefficient. The reason that Harris didn't get on the field last year is because he really doesn't play on special teams, and Bill Belichick wants you to play on special teams. But knowing that he's getting more reps with the ones this year, they could look at him as the Sony Michel replacement and kind of just say, Sony, you might be inactive on game days if you can't contribute on special teams. So I do like Damian Harris. Unfortunately, it's getting to the point now where, is this backfield going to be such a mess that I'm not willing to invest, if he's going to go in the 12th round? Because before it was like the last round, whatever. But now it's like it's coming into the territory. Are you going to choose him over someone like Jalen Reagor? I'm not. I'm not willing to do that. But if you're able to get him in that, 13th, 14th, 15th round, in that territory, I'm okay with it. But again, it seems like Rex Burkhead's going to get some touches back here. James White is obviously still around. Cam Newton being signed did affect that a little bit too. So I'm not as high on him as I was, but you still have a chance to get a starting NFL running back in double-digit rounds. So it's still quite the value. So I'm definitely on board with this one.
Yeah, I love bringing him up in this conversation because there is a path, right? There, and that's what the qualification that we said earlier, the path to get to the point where they can help lead you to a fantasy football championship. When you have someone who's a starting running back for you and he's going in the 14th round currently of ADP, that's going to help you, right? Especially if you experience some injuries to the top guys that you drafted in the first or second round at the running back position. The counter argument here with Damian Harris is that this backfield is a mess. Like, as far as like, it is very, very crowded, and you have Rex Burkhead is going to be involved. He's going to see touches. You have Sony Michel, who did he come back too early off the pup? That can certainly be a thing where he saw, okay, I might actually lose this job to Damian Harris. I got to come back early. So is he fully healthy? But he's, as long as he's on the field, he's going to see touches too, unless Damian Harris just outright beats him. James White is going to take down passing work. So it just, there's a huge mess here, right, from a fantasy perspective for us to sift through. But I think I like Ian throwing him out because there is a path if everything goes his way. So I like that. So Tags, let's go to you here for the running back position. Who do you want to bring up?
I'm going to take the easy one here. It's a layup. I know it. But at the same time, it's the reason that I'm willing to draft him maybe a round before his ADP, and that's Kareem Hunt. It's kind of a mid-round pick, and I know it's the easy way out. But again, it's a conversation that someone brought up on Twitter, and I wish I remember who it was because I always feel bad when I don't give him credit for it. But someone brought up that Kareem Hunt is the only backup running back that I would actually rank higher than the starter if the starter went down. Because like if Ezekiel Elliott went down, Tony Pollard doesn't walk into to be the number three overall pick in drafts. You know, you go through everybody on that list. But Kareem Hunt, if something happened to Nick Chubb and he missed time, Kareem Hunt would go before Nick Chubb is going in drafts right now. So fortunately, under Kevin Stefanski, this is a team, or I should say the Vikings were a team that was running the ball. Their running backs were touching the ball 32 and a half times per game. That leaves so much to go around here. That Browns defense should be better. I'm not going to say that they've ever lived up to the talent. Now they have some injuries going on in that secondary, including the linebacking core. So they should be touching the ball 30 times. So even if Nick Chubb is getting, you know, 17, 18 touches, that leaves 12, 13 for Hunt. And we know he's very efficient with those touches. They improve the offensive line. And so you basically draft him as an RB3 flex type option. And then you're like, okay, I don't feel great about it. He's not going to win you your fantasy league by being there, but he's not going to hurt you that much either because he's going to have that floor of touches. But again, if something happens to Chubb, he has that immense ceiling. Like where if Nick Chubb was not in the picture, everyone right now would be drafting Kareem Hunt probably as the number fourth running back off the board.
I was just about to ask you that question, Ian. Where would Kareem Hunt be going if Nick Chubb wasn't in the picture this year? You know, I think CMC is probably number one, but then does he go above Saquon in your mind?
I would probably go Saquon, Zeke, then Hunt. But I mean, the fact he's there, like there's not another number two RB in the league that would have the higher ceiling. I'm like, yeah, I've almost left him like out of handcuff discussion because he has that standalone value. And I know some people are throwing out the stat how Stefanski never really used Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison on the field at the same time. But, you know, different talents on your roster calls for different situations. And Kareem Hunt is truly one of these running backs that you want to get on the field on the same time as your other running back. And he can do that. I mean, he spent 33% of his snaps in the slot or out wide last season. Only Tariq Cohen had a higher mark than that. I mean, Austin Eckler was at 26%. This is truly a guy that can, you know, be your slot wide receiver, be your wide receiver three. And then we look at the Browns and like, what did they do with their pretty gaping hole at wide receiver three this offseason? It's nothing. I mean, okay, Rashard Higgins is back. They drafted Donovan Peoples-Jones in the sixth round. But if anything, like their lack of attention to that wide receiver three spot the entire offseason, you know, makes me more confident that Hunt will have a large weekly role. He's just too good to keep on the bench. And yeah, even if it's only a flex kind of start, as long as Chubb's healthy, good God, man. I mean, that dude is going to be a top five projection every week if something happens to Chubb.
I had absolutely no idea that he spent that much time in the slot last year. That's insane. And especially too, you mentioned it, Ian, like with this, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Rashard Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones, those are not guys that are going to come onto the field. If you have Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, and you can put Kareem Hunt out in the slot, especially if they utilized him in that fashion last year. Now, again, a different coaching staff, but there's been news this offseason that Hunt's been working with the wide receivers, right? So I think that can absolutely happen where we see Hunt move into the slot or move around the formation. They're going to get him the ball because he is just that talented. He can absolutely have this standalone value. And I do like where you said that top four is probably where, yeah, I would have him.
And they also tendered him at a second round price. So they weren't just, right, giving him away as a restricted free agent. So clearly they have a role for him.
For sure. All right. I'm going to bring up Alexander Mattison. And this is, we talked about Dalvin Cook earlier. There's potential that he holds out this season. Alexander Mattison's going in the 10th or 11th round in ADP right now, guys. That is an absolute smash pick for me every single time, because especially if I end up drafting Dalvin Cook earlier. And I was just doing a live stream with Dan right before we were recording here. And I was talking to him. We got asked the question. He said, where would you take Alexander Mattison if you did end up drafting Dalvin Cook? And I said, I would take him two rounds before his average draft position right now, which would mean that I'd be taking Dalvin Cook in like the 9th, maybe 8th round in some cases, because I want pieces of this backfield on a team that is going to run the ball as much as they are. And Mattison showed that he can hang in the NFL. He is a very, very talented running back. And so he can assume this workload if Cook does miss. Now, granted, he's not going to have this standalone value that Kareem Hunt potentially would. I think that, you know, Madison's just going to see, you know, maybe what, 8 to 10 carries per game. That's probably just not enough to plug in maybe on bye weeks. But oh man, if Dalvin Cook misses, we are talking about an absolute league winner, a top 10 running back at the position, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was talking to actually a Vikings beat reporter yesterday, Matthew Collar, and one of my main questions for him was if Amir Abdullah would make the team, because I just wasn't sure if Cook's out of the picture. I know Madison's a great runner, but like we saw last year when it was time for Boone to step up, that they actually end up splitting things with him and Abdullah. And from Collar, what he was saying, man, is that Madison, one of the things he's really impressed coaches with throughout training camp is pass blocking. I know that's something that, you know, a bunch of fantasy analysts don't care about. And a lot of times, you know, I get angry when it does, you know, take a talented player off the field when, you know, you're trying to force them to do something they can't do. But either way, Madison has done enough to, you know, kind of convince the coaching staff that he can be a three down back. And I mean, again, this beat writer couldn't have been more confident that Madison would be a true three down workhorse in the event that Dalvin misses time. So absolutely, I think all these handcuffs, I mean, I might touch on another one here in a minute, but give me any of these like true three down handcuffs over guys like, you know, Philip Lindsay, Marlon Mack, Kerryon Johnson, who, okay, they're going to have a role week to week, but I mean, even with an injury, they're still going to be stuck, you know, in a two or three back committee. Someone like Alexander Madison, where if disaster strikes, I mean, okay, he's a locked in RB1 the rest of the season.
Oh yeah, if we see DeAndre Swift go down with an injury, you know, of course, God forbid, but like if we see that happen, Kerryon Johnson is not assuming this giant workload, not with his injury history, right? You're going to see Bo Scarborough factor in. You're going to see Ty Johnson factor in, right? Like that Kerryon Johnson doesn't possess this huge upside. He could have a role week in and week out, but it's going to be very similar to what Madison's going to possess. But again, Madison has this potential that he could absolutely hit later on. Okay, so Ian, let's go back to you. I believe we're up here for your second running back.
Yeah, I'm going to go my only kind of three down handcuff I have ranked higher, and that's Latavius Murray.
Oh, stole him.
Gotcha. We saw what this dude last season, only two games Kamara missed. I believe he was the, you know, overall RB2 and RB3 in those weeks. And it was just really surprising to see what he could do as a receiver because, I mean, previously in his career, he was playing with McKinnon, and then, you know, he had the Oakland teams that were also using a scat back. And the narrative was that he was just this early down grinder that would never really be able to have this three down role. I mean, the dude caught 14 passes in those two games where he was the featured guy. So Sean Payton and company were more than happy to treat him as, you know, the true three down workhorse. And look, he's not going to have a ton of standalone value the rest of the time, but he was still good for kind of 8 to 10, 12 touches per game. And while that's not, you know, what you're feeling good about in the flex, in the right matchup, and especially just inside that Saints offense, I mean, there's worse guys you could have there. So again, I mean, kind of same reasoning as I like Madison, even if Latavius isn't going to be in the starting lineup. A lot of times, you know, look, it's you're drafting this dude round 9, 10, something around there, probably, where we're shooting for the moon with upside. So Latavius, you know, few guys having kind of a higher ceiling if their RB1 goes down.
Yep, you stole them. I mean, I had three running backs down in case someone stole one, but you've stolen two of mine with Damian Harris and Latavius Murray. Latavius is a discounted Kareem Hunt, in my opinion. You know, he's a guy that should have actually, I actually believe he's actually going to have more flex value than people believe. If you look at the Saints and you go back to 2013 through 2018, okay, here's the rushing attempts for Saints running backs. Starting back in 2013, and watch this escalate: 347, 358, 360, 371, 386, 387. And then you get to 2019, it went to 326. This offense, clearly, they changed a bit with Teddy Bridgewater under center. They didn't run as many plays with Bridgewater under center. It was just a different team, right? And I believe that this team starts going back. Drew Brees is in the final year that he's going to be playing football. Obviously, there's a decline there that's going to happen. I know he's completing a ton of passes still, but they're at a much lower average depth of target than the league averages. His deep ball is starting to drop off a little bit. So I do believe this team turns back to somewhat of a run-heavy approach with the defense where they're at, because they have one of the best defenses in the NFL. I don't think many people realize that. And going back to as recent as 2017, the Saints had two running backs that finished as top six fantasy running backs, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. So Latavius Murray, I think he's going to offer flex value most weeks. And obviously, if Alvin Kamara were to go down, you know, he's not in Kareem Hunt territory, but you'd have him going at the back end of the first round if Alvin Kamara wasn't in the picture.
Guys, check this out. So half PPR ADP, Sonny Michel, RB30 off the board. Matt Breida, RB32 off the board. James White, RB35. Marlon Mack, RB37. Keyshawn Vaughn, RB38. Kerryon Johnson, RB39. Daryl Henderson, RB43. Alexander Madison, RB44. And Latavius Murray at RB45. I would take both Madison and Murray above all of those guys that I just listed. I don't know where you guys are at, but I want Latavius Murray and I want Alexander Madison on my rosters this year.
Murray for sure. Madison is, he's more of a handcuff. I don't think he provides any flex value if Cook's in the field, but he's a tier lower, but he's one of those high-end handcuffs like a Tony Pollard.
Yeah, I think the only guy you listed that's even in the conversation is Breida. Otherwise, no, both those guys over all of them.
Before we move on with the show, I wanted to tell you about one of the sponsors of today's show, Omaha Steaks. I'm a total sucker for Wagyu beef, and I got a package of Wagyu burgers sent to my doorstep. The flavor was intense, and the meat was extra juicy. Every single patty came frozen and individually sealed to maintain maximum freshness. Right now, Omaha Steaks is offering a steakhouse grilling package with a limited time offer for just our listeners. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code FANTASYPROS into the search bar. And this week, Omaha Steaks will add 4 burgers and 4 gourmet jumbo franks free with your order. It's called the Grand Summer Grill Out Package, and it lets you stay at home and eat like you're at the best steakhouse in town. Smoky sweet bacon, fork tender, filet mignon, all for much less than going out to a restaurant. Visit omahasteaks.com and type FANTASYPROS in the search bar to get this today. Omaha Steaks isn't just steak. It's the best steak of your life, guaranteed. And don't forget, when you order the Grand Summer Grill Out Package this week, you'll also get 4 Jumbo Franks and 4 Omaha Steaks burgers free to complete your steakhouse experience. Visit omahasteaks.com and type FANTASYPROS in the search bar to shop Summer Grill Packs today. All right, guys, since tags, you mentioned Latavius Murray alongside Ian, who was also, Latavius Murray was also on my list. I am just going to throw out J.K. Dobbins, because I think Dobbins is this guy that, if we're talking about week in and week out value, I think he's going to be more in the camp of Alexander Madison than a Latavius Murray, right? Where we just talked about those two players and we said that Latavius Murray can have some week in and week out value. Madison is probably one of these guys that you're holding on your bench for the majority of the season. You can roll him in on bye weeks, but looking at J.K. Dobbins, if something happens to Mark Ingram, we are talking about J.K. Dobbins as a top 5 potential at the position, I believe, in this offense. He is going to assume the majority of the workload with Gus Edwards factoring in. I believe that you'd see Justice Hill factor in too, but J.K. Dobbins is a 3-down back in the NFL. I love his talent, loved him coming out of Ohio State. Now he's in arguably the best offense in the NFL. I mean, guys, what's the best offense in the NFL? It's Kansas City, it's Baltimore, and maybe you throw Dallas into that conversation. Like, those are the three that you want pieces of, right?
Atlanta.
As far as these, Atlanta just does it on the back of pure passing volume. So I think, you know, looking at those offenses, those are the ones that you want pieces of, particularly for fantasy football. And so if you can get J.K. Dobbins at a bit of a discount, and he has this immense upside, that's someone that I would love to have, especially if I draft Mark Ingram in the 4th or 5th round.
So here's the thing. I'm going to ask you guys a question real quick. I started doing my research for week 1. Do you guys know what off the top of your head, don't look at it. Mark Ingram, what was the percent of timeshare he had with Gus Edwards and Justice Hill? Like, what would you say? Would you say it's 70, 30, 64? Like, what would you say the timeshare was?
I already have it pulled up. Kyle, you go for it.
It's going to be something like 55 to... you know, whatever.
It was 52-48.
Hey, there we go.
Ingram had 228 touches. Those two others combined for 206 touches. That's my concern with Dobbins, is that I don't know if he ever gets into elite territory, because Mark Ingram basically was as efficient as you could possibly be last year.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson's due for some rushing touchdown regression towards the mean. And Ingram finishes the RB8 last year. So Dobbins, I don't think, even if Ingram were to miss, like, let's say that Ingram were to miss the season, I think Dobbins for me would be in the conversation around RB15. I don't think I'd be willing to go higher than that, just because this is a backfield that does want to utilize Gus Edwards. You know, Justice Hill's whatever, but he's still going to get a couple touches per game. So again, with Lamar Jackson, so you're talking about like a 4-way timeshare to share.
Well, I think here's the thing to keep in mind with last year, is that the Ravens blew out so many different teams on so many different occasions, where you saw Mark Ingram didn't have carries in the 4th quarter, right? Like, you know, he was done for the day. And that's when you saw Gus Edwards get work. And that's when you saw Justice Hill. Now, Edwards factored in, you know, throughout the game, but it wasn't anything substantial. It was when you saw Ingram leave the game and sit, you know, along with the rest of the starters, that you saw Gus Edwards factor in. So those numbers are a bit skewed, in my opinion, because again, you did have the Ravens blowing a ton of teams out that led to Edwards and Hill getting a little bit more work, where I think at, if you're looking at it and saying that, that's unsustainable. I just think that it's unsustainable for the Ravens to blow out that many teams 2 years in a row, that they're going to need their starters on the field even more than they did last season, that you would see Dobbins get more work, in my opinion.
Yeah. The path to success is he gets, you know, Evers 9-ish carries per game, and he also gets Justice Hill's 4-ish touches per game, and then we have, you know, Dobbins flirting with 12 to 15 touches inside of one of the league's best offenses. That'd be fantastic, but I'm just not convinced, like Tags, that we get, you know, this two RB system. I think Edwards is going to be involved. I mean, one of the craziest stats I saw this offseason, courtesy of J.J. Zachariasen, a.k.a. late-round QB. I mean, here are the only running backs in NFL history with at least 100 attempts during each of their first two seasons and a yards per carry rate at or above 5. Barry Sanders, Clinton Portis, Nick Chubb, and Gus freaking Edwards. I mean, I know he's not blowing anyone away. I mean, you pull up the highlight reel and you're not going to be super duper impressed, but he's just the exact type of incumbent talent that I don't think is going to be, you know, benched by the coaching staff. So, you know, they drafted Dobbins around too. It'd be silly not to get him involved. And, you know, apparently he's been standing out at training camp and all that, but just really seems like another three-back committee. Ingram's going to be the lead guy again. I think 2021 is when we see Dobbins really take that step forward and be a true fantasy stud.
I just want to ask you this real quick, Ian. Like, Dobbins is going off the board as the RB 36 right now, sandwiched between James White and Marlon Mack, and then Keyshawn Vaughn right around there too. Like, is that too rich for you at RB 36? How far would he have to fall for you to consider pulling the trigger?
I think that's fine. He's actually, he was, I feel like, going in the more mid 20 range, like shortly after the draft. And he's been falling to a point that I'm fine taking a stab on him, particularly like in keeper leagues. I mean, again, Ingram's contract this year is up. So if you can get him, you know, at a reasonable price, he is going to be absolutely balling by the time 2021 comes around. So at that spot, I mean, that's fine. And then, you know, I'm a little more, if Ingram's out of the picture, even with Edwards and Hill probably keeping a three-back committee, I do think Dobbins would be the undisputed league guy and do all sorts of good things. So RB 36, yeah, that's fun.
All right, let's move over to wide receivers, guys. So let's take a look. Ian, I'm just going to throw it right back to you. So a wide receiver that you believe can be a league winner. We'll do two of these each.
From a Tag's hometown squad, I like Anthony Miller.
Dude, you're the worst. I kid you not. Like, you're literally reading off my wrist and it's killing me.
I love me some Tony Miller. I mean, this dude scored, I believe it was 7 touchdowns as a rookie while playing through a bum shoulder. Starts off last season. You know, Nagy tries to start Tariq Cohen in the slot. He's not getting much going on. Then Taylor Gabriel goes down, you know, about halfway through the season. And from weeks like 11 through 15, Miller was like the PPR wide receiver 8, just completely balling. And okay, it's not really fair to take, you know, the best 4-week stretch of a guy's career and just assume he's going to do that moving forward. But, you know, they've switched Taylor Gabriel out with Ted Ginn, which to me is a pretty clear sign that, you know, Ginn's going to be more of a true field stretcher, just kind of side piece, versus Gabriel, you know, is actually their kind of number 2 pass game option more weeks than not. And okay, let's take a look at the QB situation. Miller is Trubisky's most efficient receiver of his career in terms of adjusted yards per attempt. We've seen them do the thing together. And then Nick Foles, I mean, this time last year we had D.D. Westbrook being talked up as a top 30 fantasy receiver purely because of Foles' historical, you know, tendency to really feed his slot receivers. So, you know, it's a situation where we've, you know, he's like a discount Calvin Ridley almost. It's a talented third-year player we've seen produce at a high level, and his offense, you know, is without one of their top receivers from the season before, and it really didn't do anything to replace him. So, you know, I've read some things from the local media saying Miller, you know, just before really wasn't, you know, able to understand the whole depth of the playbook and didn't have the coach's trust. Seems like he's done a good job of turning those issues around, and I mean, at his price, sign me up.
Tags, wide receiver 54 off the board.
Mm-hmm.
I see no way that he finishes anywhere near that number. He's going to be well above that. I love Anthony Miller this year as well. Tags, it sounds like you agree.
I just had the wind taken out of my sails. It's gone. No, I obviously love the call. And I was going to say, I think it's rare to find a wide receiver being drafted outside the top 50 that has a clear path to 100 targets. And, you know, it's something that I mentioned with Devontae Parker last year. And I understand that people were mad at Parker and all this and that. And people are mad at Miller for whatever reason, because he wasn't put on the field by Matt Nagy. But as a guy that's rededicated himself this offseason, they say that he's grown up, like matured quite a bit, and that he's like showing saying that he wants to be one of the best. The talent was always there with Anthony Miller. Even going back to Memphis, he was a crazy high touchdown scorer. And on a target-for-target basis, he's been just as efficient as someone like Robert Woods has over the last 2 years. It's just the targets weren't there. So you add in a healthy offseason. You add in the motivation to get better. This is the third year in the league. You know, with double the chance at competent quarterback play, Anthony Miller was definitely on my list.
Agreed. All right, Tags, let's send it right back to you. Wide receiver.
Oh, now that I have to throw up a little bit. I'm not going to talk about AJ Green. I've talked about him enough as a middle round guy that I absolutely love this year and I have on a lot of my teams. But I'm going to go to someone that we have not talked about a lot just because I want to talk about someone that I haven't. Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks has gone from Drew Brees to Tom Brady to Jared Goff and now to Deshaun Watson. And this might be the chance that he has for the most targets he's ever had. You know, Will Fuller is someone that has been unable to stay on the field. Does Fuller get most of the targets when they're both in the lineup? Yeah, probably because there's some familiarity with Deshaun Watson in this offense. But don't forget that, you know, Randall Cobb's new to this offense. David Johnson's new to this offense. Duke Johnson isn't really used at all. So Brandon Cooks is a guy that's gone from team to team and continually produced. I know that the concussions last year seemed to add up and then he wasn't on the field and this and that, but we have a history of production from this guy, and now he's going to play with I'm just going to say, the time that he played with Brady and the time that he played with Goff, I think that Deshaun Watson's a better quarterback than those guys are at this stage in his career. So I'm going to say he's going to his best quarterback since his Drew Brees days. And again, on a team that has one of the worst defenses out there. Like, we saw the Texans continually take a step back, like with their secondary. It's just, there's so many moving parts here. And then they lose the biggest piece over the middle, DJ Reader, on their defensive line. That's going to hurt quite a bit. So this defense is going to allow plenty of points. You're going to see Deshaun Watson dropping back, buying time. Brandon Cooks is a guy that continually finds separation. He's fast, sure, but he's actually one of the smartest route runners out there. He knows how to sit in a zone. He understands defensive coverages. So I think that's why you continue to see him as a productive individual. So I'm going to say that Brandon Cooks is a guy that could potentially see 120 plus targets, and you're able to get him. His current draft position is 91 overall, which means you're talking about, you know, the eighth round roughly, to get Brandon Cooks as your wide receiver 4 or something like that. I just think that there's a clear path to where he can actually win you a fantasy title.
Tags, I'm shocked that you didn't mention Will Fuller. I anticipated that he was going to be someone that you bring up, and instead you talk about Brandon Cooks, which I'm in agreement with here. Ian, which side of this argument do you land on? Do you believe that, let's talk about league winning upside. Do you think it's Brandon Cooks or do you think it's Will Fuller?
I mean, I think it can be both, because both these guys are being priced as like wide receiver 3s, if not wide receiver 4s. Even throw Cobb in there. I mean, if you're one of those people that just think Fuller and Cooks are going to get hurt, I mean, Deshaun Watson's going to put up numbers. It's just a matter of figuring out who. And I mean, these Texans, and I'd say to a lesser extent, the Giants receivers have stuck out to me all offseason because they are all being priced near their floor. I mean, there's no way Cooks and Fuller aren't going to smash their ADPs with a healthy season. And everyone that wants to say they're going to get hurt, well, like, that's why they are so cheap, but they have that upside. Like, why are you going to draft some, you know, 4 condom receiver like Jamison Crowder over Brandon Cooks, who we've seen do it? And, you know, going, like, looking at last season, one of my biggest misses was just, you know, assuming top 5 upside from OBJ. And for that reason, you know, I've been a little wary of drafting DeAndre Hopkins as a true wide receiver 1. But, like, we don't have to draft Cooks as a wide receiver 1. And, you know, I went back all the way to 2010, looked at every single instance of a wide receiver being traded during the offseason and got the, you know, corresponding, finish the following year. Brandon Marshall is the only guy to turn in, like, actual wide receiver 1 production. But you look at the top 4 seasons, and Cooks is responsible for 2 of them. In 2017, he turned into wide receiver 15 season. 2018, he gets traded again. He turns into wide receiver 13 season. So we've seen the guy produce all over the place. I don't see why Houston will be any different.
All right, guys, I am going to bring up Diontae Johnson here. Looking at Diontae Johnson in Pittsburgh, this is a guy that I want shares of in 2020. Diontae Johnson was excellent last season with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges as his quarterbacks, guys. And now we're talking that we get Ben Roethlisberger back, a healthy Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, I want pieces of this offense. And especially when you factor in that Chase Claypool was not a guy that I was super impressed with coming out. I thought he was more of this tight end. You know, I actually liked him more as a move tight end. I didn't like him as an outside receiver, but the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted him to be that. He's going to be this outside receiver that presents a big body presence so they can move Juju back into the slot, which leaves Diontae Johnson on the outside. James Washington, I think, will come onto the field in certain instances to stretch the field, but It's Johnson and Juju from a target perspective that are going to lead this team here in Pittsburgh this year. And so in a high, potentially high scoring offense, again, it all kind of hinges on Roethlisberger. But even if Roethlisberger goes down, we know that Deontay Johnson is still going to be fine. I think that Johnson has top 15 upside if Roethlisberger locks onto him and trusts him, which from all indications, it's looking like he does. So for him to be going off the board as a wide receiver 43 and half PPR ADP right now, again, we talk about it, a smash selection for me. I'm hitting that draft button everywhere.
Yep, I've been clear in my love for Deontay Johnson. I've drafted him in quite a few drafts already. Ian, what's your take on him?
I mean, look, Ben fed both Juju and Antonio Brown more than 160 targets in 2018. I mean, you know, it's scary to project multiple wide receivers in the same offense to, both ball out in the same year. But, I mean, we've seen an average dating back to 2010, 4.3 teammates per season at the wide receiver position, both finish as top 24 performers. I think Pittsburgh can certainly enable that. And look, I mean, Juju played through a bunch of injuries last year. I don't think enough people kind of put that in the context when talking about it. But even with that said, I mean, Deontay Johnson was the Steelers' best wide receiver last year. It would make sense if Juju, a healthier version, gets back to being that guy. But man, Deontay was the number two wide receiver in broken tackles per touch last season, only behind Debo. And I know we don't get fantasy points for broken tackles, but like for me, they do stand out as something that can really help identify like who is truly a good player and who had like, you know, a lucky 8-game stretch here or there. I think Deontay Johnson is the real deal. And yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even be shocking if he leads his team in receiving next year.
That's the thing. Like, there is an actual path for Deontay Johnson to lead this team in targets. Now, I'm not projecting that, but there's a path for it to happen. And if that does, then we're looking at switching Juju and Deontay Johnson in our rankings, right? And Juju's going up in the top 12, I think. So it's like there is a path that Deontay Johnson absolutely just leads your team to a fantasy football championship this season. I love it. All right, Ian, let's go to you here for the second wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of my Ohio State guys, Mr. Paris Campbell, projected Colts wide receiver 2, and all the words out of camp have just been great. They've always been great out of camp. I mean, last year from this was, I believe, in July, where Coach Frank Reich was saying Paris Campbell is making legit NFL, I'm going to be a stud receiver type plays. And, you know, watching him at Ohio State, the problem was always like, is he actually this wide receiver 1, or is he, you know, this guy's a high school running back, or is he someone you just manufacture touches for and try to get him the ball in space? And yeah, I'm still not totally convinced he can be, you know, this legit alpha, you know, 150 target hog. But, you know, all the word out of Colts camp is that Phillip Rivers is dunking the ball down more than ever. And a lot of that is going to Paris Campbell. I mean, it'd be surprising to me to see him, you know, not get potentially just 5 design touches per week, not even taking into account, you know, regular target share. So T.Y. Hilton, apparently he's healthy now, but he's already had this setback with a hamstring injury. Michael Pittman's fine, but I think he's playing, I think it's more like Pittman versus Pascal. I think Campbell's spot in the offense is, you know, for sure locked in there. The injuries last year were kind of fluky. Like, he broke a hand. It wasn't anything that I think we need to necessarily expect to impact him moving forward. And you talk about guys that can just go, you know, put their foot down and go from 0 to 100 in a second. It's Paris Campbell. So he is like going so cheap right now in fantasy drafts. And I think this is like why, at least me, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, get your RBs early, because there are 50, 60 wide receivers you can talk yourself into this year. And Paris Campbell is certainly one of them.
Oh yeah, I mean, Anthony Miller and Paris Campbell late everywhere has been my strategy. So I love it. Tags, I know that you're going to agree with this one.
Yeah, again, I had 5 names down, and Paris Campbell was one, and I was like, I really was hoping he would take Paris Campbell, though, because I wanted to talk about my guy. But Paris Campbell, I think the reason that, you know, I had someone ask me today in a Reddit AMA if I thought it was Pittman or Paris Campbell is one of the breakout guy in Indianapolis, and I said it was Campbell because it is his second year in this offense. He did learn it. He was dealing with some injuries last year. This team was extremely high on him in last year's draft. They were psyched to get him in the second round, and knowing that Phillip Rivers has traditionally targeted someone over the middle of the field, I don't know if Jack Doyle or Trey Burton does it for Phillip Rivers, where Paris Campbell is a guy, you get the ball in his hands, let him do his work. Again, second year in the league, whereas Michael Pittman is trying to overcome that rookie hurdle that a lot of rookies are going to struggle to do because they don't have that preseason action. So it's very possible that Zach Pascal starts over Michael Pittman this year just because of this weird offseason, and eventually he takes over. But Paris Campbell is clearly in this lineup from day one, so I definitely dig this one.
All right, Tags. Well, you said you've got someone that you're really excited to talk about. Let's hear it.
Yeah, it comes back to the whole idea that, you know, without injury, can we find a wide receiver one, like, on his football team in the double-digit rounds? And you're finding that with Jalen Reagor. Jalen Reagor is definitely the best football player on his team at this point. You know, Alshon Jeffery going to start the year on the PUP list. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside's a bust. It was a terrible pick to begin with. It's funny. We look back at that and we say, it's hard to, you don't want to critique someone too much because like scouting prospects is really tough, right? But to draft him over someone like DK Metcalf made absolutely zero sense. They drafted him over quite a few different players, but we won't get into that. But DeSean Jackson, 34 years old, not a target hog, not a guy that's going to see more than, you know, 5 to 7 targets per game. So are we looking at the Eagles, you know, wide receiver that's going to lead them in targets, receptions, yards, and potentially touchdowns? Yeah, I do. There might be a learning curve again. He is a rookie coming into the league, but from everything that we've heard out of Eagles camp, it's that Carson Wentz absolutely loves him. He compared him to Julio Jones, and it was a tongue-in-cheek type thing, but knowing that he's talking about in that type of company just goes to show how high Carson Wentz is on him. And they obviously drafted him over someone like Justin Jefferson, who was considered to be a great fit for that Eagles offense. So definitely looking forward to seeing Jalen Reagor on the field. It might be a bumpy road to start out, but in the end, I think he could be this year's version of Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, Tags. I mean, if you were the one comparing Reagor to Julio Jones, I'd you know, scoff at that.
I would unfollow myself on Twitter right now.
But when it's the guy's own quarterback making a comparison, I mean, it's hard to say that's anything other than like a great sign. Yeah, I just did, you know, a big sweep of just all my ranks yesterday before everyone's, you know, fantasy draft weekend. And Reagor was one of the guys who I just had making the biggest climb. I mean, coming into camp, there was talk like, okay, well, he might just be kind of pigeonholed as like just a Z receiver or this and that. And, you know, by all accounts, they've been moving him around everywhere. It was already, you know, one of the shallowest wide receiver depth charts for him to rise up. Ertz will probably still be the number one there, but I mean, even taking that into account, I think the only other rookie receiver that you could say, you know, has a chance to kind of be in their team's top two like that clarified is Henry Ruggs. So Reagor could even, you know, surpass Ruggs and what he's doing over with and with the Raiders. So yeah, man, I think we see Wentz really get back to playing like the 2017 near MVP he was with all this speed that the Eagles have gone and gotten on the field. So yeah, man, you know, Reagor, he was had, I think out of all the rookie wide receivers, you know, looking at, you can't just look at his college stats because TCU have one of the worst quarterbacks under center. Yeah, just one uncatchable pass after another. So hearing all the right things out of camp, and, you know, he's definitely been, you know, one of the premier training camp risers at the position.
It's funny, if you go to youtube.com/fantasypros and you're watching this episode, you'll see me wincing as Tags is talking even into his sentence, because the guy that I want to bring up next, and I just want to fly through this guy because we got to hit tight ends, was DeSean Jackson. Talking about DeSean Jackson, if we're looking at league winning upside, currently going off the board is the wide receiver 58. And I mean, this is crazy too. Like, you're looking at Carson Wentz and this Eagles offense, which is going to be a very dynamic offense. What's the highest ADP for the wide receivers in this room? Is it Jalen Reagor at like, what, 50 something? Like, that's just crazy that you have these guys. As long as DeSean Jackson is on the field, he is going to produce for fantasy football. And we saw what he can do in this offense. Tags mentioned like 5 to 7 targets per game. Week one last year, what, 9 targets, 8 receptions, 2 touchdowns. Like, he has this potential that you plug him into your lineup as a flex as long as he's healthy. And he's still going to produce for your lineup. Now, granted, he's another year older, but DeSean Jackson is one of these guys that speed is always going to be there. I just think that speed is always going to be there for this guy, that he is going to produce. So again, you're drafting him now all the way down outside in like the 60s, right? Or 58 or whatever I said. And yeah, wide receiver 58, you don't have to rely on him for the entire season. But if you can get him and he plays all 16 games, then you consistently just plug him into your wide receiver 3 flex spot, and he can absolutely take any pass to the house.
Yep. In a year where there's so much uncertainty going into Sunday mornings, I think he's one of those guys to have on your bench that you could potentially plug in and just kind of go off. As I mentioned the other day, he's finished as a wide receiver 3 or better in 50% of his games over the last 3 years. So he's still a good player. He really is. He doesn't require a lot of volume to get it done. And obviously, he works pretty well with Carson Wentz, as we've seen in the one game that we got them together. So, right. Yeah, I like DeSean Jackson, too.
All right, Ian, let's go to the tight end position here.
Yeah, I can barely go on a podcast these days without screaming this dude's name, but draft Chris Herndon. Every single league, I want Chris Herndon. Here are the only rookie tight ends to average at least 8 yards per target since 2000. Herndon, Mark Andrews, Gronk, Hunter Henry, Heath Miller, Aaron Hernandez, Noah Fant, Jordan Reed, Zach Ertz, and George Kittle. What happened last season? He was suspended and then, you know, pulled his hamstring running routes on air. He played six snaps the whole season, never had a chance. Now you fast forward to this year. Ryan Griffin starts the year on PUP, can't even get out on the field until about a week ago. And they asked Adam Gase about the tight end situation. The coach himself said, Chris Herndon is our starting tight end. Even complimented the guy's ability to be an on-the-line tight end that can block, and you don't have to worry about taking him off the field. So couldn't be a more shallow passing game for Herndon to get into. I mean, it would not be surprising at all if Herndon legit leads this team in targets. You know, every single talk out of Jets camp has been Darnold throwing it to his tight end one all the time, and he's still going as like the tight end 18 or lower. I mean, okay, if you get Kittle, Kelsey, or Andrews, you probably don't even need to have a backup tight end in most leagues. Just pick someone up later. I get it, but why reach on any of these kind of tight ends 4 through 10 when you have guys like Herndon available for almost free later? I think Herndon is this year's just obvious Darren Waller pick as a truly talented tight end that could, again, you know, easily surpass that triple-digit target mark.
They're going to need him in this offense. They are absolutely going to need him with Breshad Perriman potentially missing time too. Denzel Mims not on the field. And then, yeah, Ryan Griffin just coming back. Like, Darnold loves his tight end. So, Ian, where do you have Chris Herndon ranked?
He's my tight end 13.
Okay. I'm not going to agree with the statement just personally that he could potentially lead this team in targets. I think that's Jamison Crowder. Personally, I just think he's going to see every freaking target that he can handle. But then I think as far as second in this offense, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he sees that enough work over Le'Veon Bell. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Chris Herndon is second on this team in targets. And that, if you're chasing things at the tight end position, I'll just say this really quick and then we'll move on to tags. If you're chasing things at the tight end position, you're either chasing touchdown volume, which is what people are doing with drafting Jared Cook in the top 10 this year, right? Because, or Gronk, right? Or you're chasing pure target volume, which is, you know, the George Kittles and the, you know, Travis Kelce's and all that. But then at the later ends, you're looking at targets, and Chris Herndon absolutely could be in line for a huge target share this season. I like the call. Tags, let's go to you for the tight end position.
I just want to offer one piece of analysis on the Chris Herndon thing. I understand all the points, but the one glaring negative, his head coach is Adam Gase, and I don't like that. But moving back over to mine, I'm going to go with Hayden Hurst. That's a given, I think, considering I have not wavered my support of him. As soon as that trade happened where the Falcons traded a second round pick for him, I moved him up to, I think it was number 9 in my tight end rankings, and said I would take him over Austin Hooper. It was considered a hot take at the time. Now it's not. Now it's really not at all. And it's what smart people are doing because they're finally coming around to it. But Hayden Hurst is a guy that you're able to get right. Usually around the 9th round is where he comes off the board. I'm okay taking him in the 8th if you want to. Some people are like, Tags, you like him so much. Would you take him in the 7th? And I'm like, the more you reach for players, you're removing a lot of that equity, the reason that I like them so much to begin with. And I don't think you should start reaching for players like that. Like Darren Waller sometimes falls into the 6th or 7th round, and I'll take him there. But if you get into that 8th round, that's where I'm comfortable taking Hurst, is that next tier of tight ends. Just, I mean, there's just so much volume to be had in this offense. And I said it before, I'll say it again. I think Hayden Hurst is a more talented football player than Austin Hooper. I understand. I don't expect him to come in from day one and automatically just sync with Matt Ryan and, you know, become a top 5 tight end. I don't get that from day one. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but at the same time, he's a guy that I'm projecting for well over 80 targets. And if you're getting 80 targets as a tight end, you are automatically in that tight end one conversation, which is again, why I think that Ian brings up Chris Herndon as a guy that I also had on my list to talk about, but I just can't fully trust Herndon on a week to week basis because Adam Gase is a guy that, and I hate to say this, but he clearly holds grudges against players. He really does. And we've seen him hold back players in the past. And he was frustrated with Chris Herndon last season because once he came back from the injury, he basically, I can't remember the exact Gase quote, but said basically he's just not in football shape or something like that. So he was like mad at him. Adam Gase is certainly a ticky-tack guy. And we've seen this year over year. So that's the reason I would rather go with someone like Hayden Hurst.
I just don't want to reach on any of these tight ends, you know, after Andrews, because they're, you know, this viable question for Hurst. Will he be the number 3 option in that passing game, or will Russell Gage and Gurley surpass him? I don't think that'd be, you know, all that shocking. And I just don't want to spend, you know, any pick before the double digit rounds on him, on Hunter Henry, on Waller, on, you know, Higbee. There's just so many questions with these guys. And I hear you with Herndon. I wouldn't leave a draft with Herndon as my only tight end, but you don't have to. You can go to rounds 14, 15, throw Jonnu Smith Smith in there. You know, I was really fine with Hayden Hurst, like right after the trade, and, you know, he was kind of being ranked in the teens almost, but people like you, Tags, have hyped him up enough so that he's going as this, you know, top nine, top 10 tight end. And I just feel like at this point, that's kind of towards the top of his range of outcomes. I mean, as good as Hooper was last year, I mean, the amount of production that he got while trailing, just there was no situation where the Falcons entered Sunday and said, you know, okay, Calvin and Julio, you guys are great, but we're really going to focus on feeding Austin Hooper today.
Right.
So I don't expect that to happen. Now, you know, if Matt Ryan's going to tie for the league lead in pass attempts again, obviously there's more than enough room for all these guys to eat. So I see the scenario, but, you know, just my overall draft strategy this year has been fading those middle round tight ends and then just, you know, taking a few dart throws at the end.
Yeah, by the way, real quick, guys, while we're on the subject of tight ends, apparently George Kittle, he did not practice today due to hamstring tightness. So this is just another kick in the groin for the San Francisco 49ers pass catching group.
This is crazy.
Yeah. Sheesh.
Yeah, they got Kevin White out there catching passes now.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to mention my tight end really quick. Obviously, Hayden Hurst, Jonnu Smith, they're on my list, right? These are the guys that I want. But if I'm going to look a little bit later, I'm going to talk about Blake Jarwin. We talked about the offenses earlier that I want to invest in, Dallas, Baltimore, Kansas City. And yeah, you can throw Atlanta into that conversation. I want pieces of these offenses. And Blake Jarwin, I think I have him ranked as a top 12 tight end. I have him at tight end 12 right now, even with CeeDee Lamb on the field, Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, Tony Pollard. With all those guys, there's more than enough volume to go around to support Blake Jarwin as a top 12 tight end. But then if you lose one of these pieces, if you see Zeke go down, if you see Amari Cooper, whatever, the ball is going to be spread around where Blake Jarwin is going to have to be involved. So I really, really like his opportunity. I've liked what I've seen on film from him in the instances where he has gotten the ball. And so I think he has this league winning upside this year. I don't see necessarily a top five finish, but where you're drafting him, which is tight end 23, he can absolutely help you. He's Chris Herndon for me, right, Ian? He's this guy that I want to invest later on at that draft price. All right, guys, that is all we've got for today. Huge thank you to Ian Harditz for coming on and talking some league winners with us, man. Appreciate you taking some time out of your day.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. Make sure everyone out there check out the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. If you like what you heard, just published my top 300 over at the website as well. So at iHardits on Twitter. And thanks, dudes. Always fun to talk ball with you guys.
Absolutely. I was just about to mention, make sure you follow him on Twitter at iHardits. Mike and I are on Twitter as well at KyleYNFL and at Mike Taglier NFL. Tags, we talked about it. People are most likely going to be drafting this weekend. Any final words of wisdom for the people?
You know, Yates, the people don't know it yet, but we actually had a conversation with Jeff Fisher earlier today. That's going to be that's going to be on a podcast that you guys are going to hear in the near future. But he was basically saying that a lot of rookies or players going to new teams that they have to learn a new scheme in with this offseason, it would be best to, if you're looking at a tiebreaker and you're torn between two players, go with the guy that's a non-rookie or not switching teams. It's just a lot safer to do in this year's drafts.
For sure. That was a fun interview. I can't wait for people to hear it on this weekend. I want to make sure that we say thank you to Owner's Box for sponsoring today's podcast. Don't forget that the new wave of fantasy sports is finally here with Owner's Box. Go to ownersbox.com/fantasypros and sign up for their exclusive beta right now. Each user who signs up will receive 100 Owner's Bucks that can be used to enter contests risk-free and will convert to cash when real money contests begin. Again, that's ownersbox.com/fantasypros. And a huge thank you to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring today's podcast. Right now, Omaha Steaks is offering a steakhouse grilling package with a limited time offer for just our listeners. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code FANTASYPROS into the search bar. And this week, Omaha Steaks will add 4 burgers and 4 gourmet jumbo franks free with your order. Again, that's omahasteaks.com and enter the code FANTASYPROS into the search bar. All right, then, for Mike Taglier and Ian Harditz, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand, and stirring up trouble.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast hosts Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.